The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. Now, as you know, I've been a hip-hop DJ and in the hip-hop radio industry basically my entire adult life, over 25 years at this point, and one reoccurring theme of hip-hop has always been to make it out the hood. In fact, most entertainment and media outlets celebrate those who grew up in impoverished neighborhoods and quote-unquote made it out. But is that train of thought getting a little old? Is there a conversation to be had around staying in the neighborhood and reimagining and investing in it? My guest today believes so. In fact, she believes in it so much that she wrote a book about it. Majora Carter is an urban revitalization expert, real estate developer, and author of the new book, Reclaiming Your Community. You don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one. And she's not just preaching this as her gospel, she's actually living it. She still lives in the same South Bronx neighborhood she grew up in and has opened several businesses right there on her home turf. I think I covered everything. I've got nothing else to say, so let's get it started. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Polo Giddy. Live. Yeah. What's up? This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though. Right
here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else. Yeah. It's the Dolo White Podcast.
All right, episode 63 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, very excited to have you on, Majora Carter. You are the author of Reclaiming Your Community. You don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so your book is basically about making your neighborhood better, which I know all across the country, especially here in Nashville, we're seeing gentrification at levels that I'm not a historian, but I don't know that we've seen them at the levels we're seeing them right now. But that's kind of what your book is about.
Actually, what my book is about is our approach to community development, which is sort of like when you think about it, there are two kinds of real estate development in the kind of communities that we're talking about. And I know a little bit about Nashville, but you know, in my community, it's an inner city up here. There's either what we call poverty level economic maintenance, and you know it when you see it. It's kind of like there's economic developments that basically make money for folks that aren't from this community. So whether it's, you know, healthcare clinics or, you know, affordable housing that developers get fees for, you know, you'll find things like lots of check cashing stores or places where you just don't, if you had an opportunity to shop elsewhere, you would. So that's like poverty level economic maintenance. And then the other kind is typically the kind of gentrification that basically breeds either displacement, but makes people feel like that development's not for them.
Right.
And the kind that we are looking at we call it a talent retention approach. We literally borrowed that phrase from the business community, you know, that looks at their talent, the people that are employed there in many cases, or smart ones do. They're the ones that, you know, will invest in their workforce, you know, in the hopes that it pays the back and supports them, right? The business. And we don't do that in American low status communities, the ones that really harbor, that are pushing either gentrification or poverty level economic maintenance. And I think that if we can entice the folks that are in our communities and help them to measure success, not by how far they get away from those communities, but by reinvesting in them financially and emotionally and even spiritually.
This is something that you've done yourself. I know here in Nashville, we have a story of some guys. I don't know if you've ever heard of Slim and Huskies. It's a pizza.
I've been to Slim and Huskies.
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly what Slim and Huskies did, is they opened, you know, a pizzeria that was popular all over the city, but employed people. They opened it in North Nashville, where right. At that time they were basically the first, you know, business that had opened there for a while. And then they employed people from North Nashville to work there. Is that a good example of what you're talking about?
Is an excellent example. I mean, when I first found out about Slim and Huskies, I was like, yes, you know, because I opened up a cafe, literally the first cafe we've had in our community since I was in high school here in the 1980s.
Wow.
And it was specifically because, you know, when I decided I was going to be a real estate developer, you know, I looked, you know, just asked people. So I was like, I know there's not just these two different ways to do development in our communities. You know, it's just not, but there's got to be something else. And so I asked people, like, what were they leaving the community in order to experience. When I realized that the same type of folks that, you know, I knew had all sorts of good things going on in their lives, they were leaving the community for things like cafes and restaurants, you know, bars and great bookstores and cool parks and just even great affordable housing that matched their income. And we were like, why are we not building this in our own community? Why are we expecting, you know, the folks in our community to leave it and go enrich somebody else's, as opposed to really looking back at our own? Because I don't believe gentrification starts when we start seeing, you know, things like doggy daycares or like nice cafes and cool pizzerias, you know, in neighborhoods where you didn't see them before. It happens when people in our own communities do not value them. And we've been led to believe that we shouldn't, because there's no value there while we're in it. And I'm not about that life.
When you opened that cafe, did you have people tell you like, you're crazy? Like, this is not, this is, there's no way that this works in this, in this neighborhood. Like, was that?
We were sort of, you know, pushed toward opening it, you know, by the fact that there were people who were just like, I wish that there was someplace I could come to my neighborhood. But listen, there were absolutely some folks who looked at the development of a cute cafe as the harbinger of gentrification and didn't quite, you know, understand that here we were, you know, I'm as local as local gets. I got three generations right here, you know, within a 2-block radius of where I grew up. And I still live here as well. But again, if we keep thinking that our communities are not ever really developed for us, by us, then it's hard for people to believe that. And so, I mean, I think I was just considered sort of like, if this can't be real.
Right.
Some folks. And it was just like, nah, it's pretty, like, I'm right here. Yeah. No, we could talk. But yeah, there were definitely some folks who had issues with it.
I don't think people look at certain communities and think this type of business is going to thrive here. Right. Like, I think that most people will look and like, oh, that can't happen. We can't open this there. Right. What are some examples of other successful businesses that you've seen outside of, you know, cafes and with Slim and Husky's, a pizzeria, stuff like that? What are some other businesses that you've seen thrive in neighborhoods that just were never really given a chance?
Yeah. And I'm not going to say that it's hard. And I think especially, you know, like, you know, I'm in like the part of the South Bronx I'm in we're like straight hood. And I'm, you know, look, and I'm saying that as a girl from the hood,
right?
Like, I'm all right with it. But however, you know, to be like first in, it's hard. Like, we're just getting to the point where it's okay for us. Right. Because it took a long time. Like, first in was like hard when we're like in a sea of Dunkin' Donuts. You know, sometimes it's kind of like people had to like actually embrace the fact that nice things could happen in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Right. And now we are. And I feel like I'm good with that. It also helped that we just create this great space for it. And Beyonce's foundation helped as well. It was like very nice. But, you know, there is a really amazing, you know, young woman named Noelle Santos who did a crowdfunding, you know, a campaign specifically for to open up a bookstore. We didn't have a bookstore, you know, in the Bronx. And she's like wildly successful. It's called the Lit Bar, like Lit for Literature and Lit for Tipsy, but kind of because it's a combination bookstore wine bar. Although because of COVID, she actually shut the wines part down because it was just too many regulations. I understand. You know, there's another cafe called Bistro, which is like a hip hop themed, like actually fine dining experience also in the South Bronx. You know, also these are just guys from the neighborhood, you know, who decided that they wanted to take their fine dining, you know, bona fides, you know, and keep them in the hood as opposed to sharing them out all the time. And, you know, I feel like there's some examples in my book, Noni Sessions from East Bay Permanent Real Estate Cooperative, or EB PREC, out in Oakland. They're doing what's going to be a major redevelopment, but they're doing it, you know, through an investment platform that's allowing, you know, folks from the community to basically own real estate cooperatively. And, but it's a real estate development. It's not like some little like, oh, isn't this a cute little program for the community? It's like, no, there's a real ownership stakes. There's permanent affordability. There's commercial, you know, enterprise associated with it. It's super exciting. It's really exciting.
I also read that you helped turn a local dump into a park?
I did. I spearheaded the development of what was a brownfield, and it had been used as a dump for at least 30 years, and it's now a national award-winning park. Wow. So that was actually my first foray into the talent retention strategy that I talk about in my book, because, you know, parents would take their kids out of the neighborhood, you know, just to go to a park.
Right.
You just didn't have it here, or at least not the kind that you wanted to take your children to. And so there's that. And then, but it really did kind of cement in my mind, you know, and even that was sort of interesting, sort of watching people, because we hadn't had anything quite like that in the neighborhood, that some folks literally were just like, but is this for us? Like literally people.
Yes. I think another thing is to be said is that you being from there and doing that, I think a lot of people think, oh man, this is a dump over here. This is too big for me to take on. There's no way I could possibly turn this into something nice for our neighborhood. But you were able to do that, which shows that it can be done.
Absolutely.
And that the residents in the neighborhood can do that.
Right. And that's what I'm hoping that this book does, you know, because if here I am, you know, third generation, you know, I'm the second of three generations, you know, of my family, you know, the part of that great migration that came up from down south and moved up here from Georgia and South Carolina, and was expected to leave the community and instead said, you know what? No, I think we need to stay and reinvest. And, you know, and I could say that, like, you know, quite humbly, because not all of my family felt that way. As a matter of fact, my family sold, you know, but after my parents passed away, they sold the family house that my father bought, you know, he was a Pullman porter. He'd won $15,000, you know, at a horse track, you know, this was in the 1940s and there wasn't nobody giving black men, you know, loans to buy houses. So
right.
He literally had to carry $15,000 across country, plunk it down for cash to buy a house for his family.
Wow.
And by the time, you know, the early, you know, mid 2000s, you know, my family was just like, well, it's cute, Majora, what you do on the community side, but that neighborhood's not going anywhere. And so of course we're going to sell it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's a common story. And instead we need, what I'm hoping that this book kind of does is like what Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote a blurb for me, said, I hope it sparks a conversation between families, community members, you know, even the nonprofit industrial complex to really think about how we are not creating the kind of thriving communities when we're not working to actively retain the talent that's in them.
I think there's also a narrative there that has to be changed, because I think the narrative is, if you grow up in these neighborhoods, the narrative is get out, you know,
yes.
Do whatever you got to do. Just get out.
Totally. And that's what's so crazy. It's like you know, we are taught to measure success by how far we get away.
Mm.
I mean, it's this beautiful little Cinderella story narrative that Americans just love, especially when it comes to, like, you know, American low status communities, because we love the idea of, like, you know, somebody's got a hard scrabble existence and then they pull themselves up and out. And it's just like, but what about, like,
everybody else? Yeah.
Like, why is my example, like, suddenly, like, useful for everybody else to benefit from, as opposed to my own people, my own community?
Wow.
And, you know, that's what gets in the way of our communities really thriving.
Everybody wants to leave. The goal is to leave. And in order for what you're talking about to really take formation, and I think it should. I love everything that you've done, just like I love what the guys from Slim and Huskies have done here in Nashville as well. That narrative has to be changed at some point.
Yeah. And that's how it needs to be started, slowly but surely. But, you know, taking a second look at our communities, not selling the family's home, you know, when a predatory speculator knocks on the door offering you, you know, cash for your property. You know, or thinking about generational wealth where you are, and, you know, even starting businesses there, or supporting the folks that are starting businesses in your community. Because believe me, they are there.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, it is harder for them than it is for any chain or anybody who's got the backing, you know, of folks that are not from your community.
One more question and I'll let you out of here, because I know you got to go, and I could talk to you all day about this. But for people that have gotten out and maybe want to go back, or maybe want to try to open a business in their own neighborhood, something of that, what would your first bit of advice be to them?
Talk to your old neighbors, you know, and just let them know that you're still there. Number one, I do think that's super important, just to get the idea that like this is something that you're interested in doing. You know, the next thing is just get your plan ready and start looking for access to capital, like straight up. And I think that's what you really need to do. But again, like we need to socialize these conversations. So it's not just like, oh, isn't that cute? What so-and-so is doing over there.
Yeah, I love
it. Then you could also tell, you'll hear more about it.
The book is Reclaiming Your Community. Majora Carter, thank you for doing this. And, you know, next time you're in Nashville, you should come in and do it live and we can have some Slimming Huskies.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen, plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other. Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest Majora Carter. Make sure you follow her on the gram at Majora Carter and check out her book, Reclaiming Your Community. You don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one. And speaking of Instagram, follow me while you're on the gram as well. I'm also on TikTok, Clubhouse, Twitter, everything you got, I got it too. So check me out at DolaWhite101, DolaWhite101. I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. Brand new episode drops next week. My guest will be Pastor John Siebling. He wrote a book about God and race, two reoccurring themes of this podcast. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Remember, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, to rate and review, and no matter what platform you're checking this out on right now, make sure you subscribe and follow. I definitely appreciate that love. Back next Wednesday morning, early Wednesday morning, with a brand new episode. Thank you for checking out the pod.